This afternoon, I'm going to talk a little bit about what we've been seeing with pertussis in Texas. And first, I'd like to acknowledge all of our local health department and our regional health department staff, because they're the ones who do the actual day-to-day activities on pertussis investigation. So all the data that we are talking about today is data they've collected. And just a little bit of background information, talk about the size of Texas. We have 254 counties. We have a total population of 24 million, and our birth cohort annually is about 375,000 infants. The infrastructure for public health in Texas is a little bit decentralized. We have a state office in Austin, Texas. We also have 8 regional health departments who are part of the state, and then we have 52 local health departments with whom we contract with to provide vaccine-preventable disease surveillance services and immunization services. About 83% of our population resides within a local health department jurisdiction. So about 17% of our population is the responsibility of our regional health departments. And here's just a map of our state. Outlined in the blue are our different regional offices. So we have 8 of them. We have 8 regional health departments within those areas that are directed by a medical director. The counties in gray are the counties where the regional health departments have jurisdiction, and the tan color are those where we have contracts with local health departments. So you can see it's pretty sparse as far as which local health departments are out there actually doing the investigations. And just to kind of give you some background of like, why is pertussis an issue for us in Texas? And this kind of shows you the highest morbidity in the 20th century for our vaccine preventable diseases compared to what we're seeing now as in 2008. And for most of our diseases, we've had a 99% reduction, or 100% except for pertussis. Whereas in 2008, we have about 1,800 cases reported, which represents about a 91.2% decline. So prior to vaccine availability in Texas, we were seeing on an average about 9,000 cases reported. And that range was from as little as 4,000 up to 21,000, and I think it was 1949. After that, the introduction from 1980 to 1999, typically about 300 cases were reported annually. And then it became an issue for us in 2000 when we saw there was a resurgence of cases, and that'll be demonstrated on this slide, which demonstrates cases from 1920 through 2008. And you can see when the vaccine was introduced in 1949, we saw a steady decline, as what's also been seen in the US. However, kind of at the tail end, right here, we started seeing some peaks. And then we'll look at that data a little bit further on the next slide. And in Texas, we have the same cyclical trend as the US sees, that every 3 to 4 years. 1998 was actually the last peak of the three years prior. And then in 1999 to 2001, we started to see an increase again. And then we really kind of got alarmed in 2002 because it was the first time in over many years that we reached over 1,000 cases. The other thing to mention is that we started implementing PCR testing in the state in 2003 and probably fully go into PCR testing in 2004. And the incidence of disease, if you look at total population, also shows the same trend to where we've kind of had the peak every 3 to 4 years and then drop. And so right now in 2007, we're at about 3-4 cases per 100,000 population. In 2005, we had a large outbreak statewide, and our incidence was about 10 cases per 100,000 population. And so I know earlier Tammy was going over the age groups of disease, and I looked at the data for the state of Texas. And ours is a little bit different than what is being seen at the national level. Whereas in 1998, about the incidence of disease in less than one year of age was about 40 cases per 100,000 population. In 2007, it's 72.5. And if you look at the average from 98 to about 2001, it was similar to the 40. And then going from 2002 through 2007, the average is about 65. So that has been seen over the last couple of years. The other thing to note is that we are seeing additional cases in that 5 to 9 age group, whereas in 1998, it was less than 1%. Or less than one. Now we're at 11.3 cases per 100,000 population. And then this is looking at our cases reported by age group. in comparing 1998 to 2007 data, the turquoise being the 1998 data. And in the earlier years, it looked like the higher proportion of our cases was in that less than 1 year of age, and to where now we're seeing a higher proportion in that 5 to 9. And that might go back to that contribution of changing from wholesale pertussis to using acellular pertussis. And of course, introduction of the PCR testing. And the other concern for Texas is that since 1998, we've had 34 deaths, and the majority of those, about 30 of them, have been in infants 2 months or less of age who were not able to be vaccinated. In 2005, we had the most deaths ever reported in the state, and that was 8 infants. And if we looked at the data by race, ethnicity, we pretty much see that over the years, there hasn't been that much of a change, and that it's pretty similar to the Texas population, and that the majority of our cases are occurring in either Hispanic or white non-Hispanic children or individuals. And then we just kind of looked at some comparison of some of the data from our surveillance from 1998 to 2007. And the first thing to note is that back in 1998, only 58 counties within our state were reporting cases, compared to 102 in 2007. And there were some changes in our surveillance system. Back in 1998, we were using all the paper records had to come into central office to be inputted into our central database. There wasn't a centralized database out at the local or the regional level. The other thing is that now in 2004, we implemented the NEDS-based system. So all of our data entry happens at the local and regional health departments instead of having to come into the state. Average cough duration is about the same. Back in 1998, it was 30 days. Now in 2007, 36 days. And we have seen a little bit of reduction in hospitalizations, and that could be due to earlier detection, earlier treatment, and diagnostics. And if we look at our cases, so when we're looking at our reported cases, we're including the confirmed and probable using the CST definitions. But in 1998, about 55% of our cases were confirmed either by laboratory or epi linkage, compared to 47% in 2007. And of those that are confirmed, about 54% in 1998 were laboratory confirmation by culture, compared to 67% in 2007, primarily by PCR testing. And if we look at vaccination history, I know this question came up earlier of our cases, comparing 1998 to 2007. In 1998, we had a lot of unknown. We didn't have a very good, complete history on vaccination status of our individuals. Whereas now in 2007, we know vaccination status on at least 80% of the population. And if you look at those children less than 5, the coverage of our cases is about 95 to 96%. But if you look at overall population, 60% can recall having been vaccinated, and that's also attributed to adults. Adults are very hard to get a vaccine history on those individuals, so sometimes they may be classified as unknown or no because they don't have any record of that. And just to kind of give you an idea of where our cases are occurring in our state, this is the incidence rates per 100,000 population. The darker the blue, the higher the incidence, and it's pretty much distributed throughout the state, not necessarily localized in one area. Central Texas is kind of where the region 7, this is kind of where Austin's at. Right here, this is the Dallas-Fort Worth area, where we're at today. And I can tell you in 2008, Dallas-Fort Worth had a large outbreak that contributed for the majority of our cases. So in 2008, we did see an increase, and it seems like a majority of that has to do with all the outbreaks in school-age children in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So in summary, in Texas, we have seen an increase in pertussis since 2000, and there could be many reasons that are contributing to that. Part of it could be introduction of the PCR testing in 2003 so that it's more widely used. You get results in a more expedient manner. Also, increase awareness. When those increases went up in 2002, we started doing educational campaigns, public service announcements, media campaigns, just increasing awareness of physicians and nurses to be out there on the lookout for pertussis. So that may have contributed to our increase in disease numbers. And the age distribution seems to be similar, although we are seeing additional cases in the 5 to 9 year age group, and which is a group that we're not hoping to see cases because they are typically fully vaccinated. And we have looked at, you know, our 5 to 9 year olds having more cases because they're exempting from immunizations. And DTaP isn't one of the vaccines where we see a lot of exempters from that vaccine. Really don't see any differences among race ethnicity groups. And the severity of the disease seems to be similar, yet we do see fewer hospitalizations. And again, we think that is contributed to early diagnosis and treatment. A high proportion of our cases are vaccinated appropriately against pertussis disease. And then I think that's all that I have. Any questions, or do you want to go back?
Thank you, Rita. I'd like to open the session up now for questions. And as you move your way up to the microphone, I'd like to plug a session that we're having tomorrow at 10:30. It's a new way of thinking pertussis outbreak management and control. And what we're hoping is that since we have a captive audience here who are very interested in pertussis, to encourage you to come tomorrow's session at 10:30. We're hoping to have an open discussion with all of you who work on pertussis about the direction with regards to pertussis management and control.
Yeah, thank you. And sticking with your example, with your modeling of the outbreak of pertussis, although Donald Trump may not be actively associating with infants, he's certainly associating with women of childbearing age. And they may be associated with infants. And so I don't want to make it too complicated, but there is a secondary transmission factor that probably needs to be taken into account. I don't know if you'd want to consider that.
I believe the question is that we might have additional cases of pertussis, given that we have if we take the close contact of infant strategy. So, yeah, and that's partially true, and that is in the model. But the alternative, I mean, the idea is that you're still protecting infants by looking at the close contact of infant strategy, and you will have higher levels of pertussis, but you're going to have the same levels of infant pertussis. And so, I mean, Oregon reports that's the case as well.
I have a question about PCR positives in Texas and whether or not you're seeing an increase in the number of PCR positives that aren't meeting your clinical case definition, because we're hearing a lot of that from health departments. And I'm wondering, in that summary slide where you said the disease severity did not really differ, whether or not you maybe took into account that there are PCR positives that aren't necessarily clinically typical pertussis.
Well, we don't. If it's a PCR positive and they don't meet clinical case definition, we don't count them as cases. So those numbers are only those individuals who meet the clinical case criteria and are PCR positive. We see a lot of testing. I mean, now that the PCR is out there, we have a lot of hospitals that any infant that comes in that's coughing, they'll test them. Like right now, in the 2009, we've had about 500 tests, more than what was done last year, but our positivity rate's really low right now, so we are seeing a lot increased testing.
I know generally Tdap rates are low, but have you seen any effect at all of Tdap immunization on pertussis rates at all?
We haven't yet. I mean, we don't have a school law in effect. It's actually going to go into effect this September, so we're hoping maybe in the next coming years and we'll see an effect from that.
I have just a couple questions. In regard to saying kids are fully immunized, do you count three doses as fully immunized, or do you count four or five?
We usually count the five doses, I mean, based on where they're at the age appropriateness. But if it's a school-age child, then we do five doses.
So they're not considered fully immunized unless they've had five doses?
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am.
And is that what your school mandate is requirement for five doses or three?
I think it is five doses is our school mandate.